Hi everyone, I'm Heidi Rogers, and this is Tell the Others. I wanted to create a place for meaningful conversation, life lessons, and parenting hacks. Sometimes I chat to interesting people, sometimes I answer questions about parenting or life stuff, and sometimes I just rant. These episodes are filled with stories and insights that made me say, ugh, I just have to tell the others. So let's dive in to hear what we can learn today. Okay, 10-year-old daughter is diagnosed with anxiety and OCD. She was not diagnosed with ADHD, but she is taking guanfacine to help with ADHD symptoms. She's in the fourth grade, and every January to June since first grade, there is a spike in talking back to teachers, outbursts in school. Adults usually escalate it, although they are trying to help. My daughter will either shut down or keep talking back while the increase, increasing consequences. The more adults are involved, the worse she gets. What have you tried already? She has a 504 and a check-in, check-out plan, although I don't know if that works for her because she isn't close to any of the adults at school. What else is happening? In first grade, she had a horrible teacher, and we think that this caused the anxiety. So in summary, what approach should teachers use instead of restorative practices since they don't work for spicy kids? Assessments and diagnoses, anxiety and depression, ADHD symptoms, but not officially diagnosed. Meds, sertraline, and guanfacine. Okay, so you're definitely describing a spicy kid because that's one of the hallmarks, that's one of the standout traits is they don't seem to respond well when adults come in with restorative practice. Where we would have seen this in like toddlerhood is the parent that says, I can see you're feeling really angry, but we can't hit. And that on paper looks like the right approach. And that on paper looks like, gentle parenting, connected parenting, or whatever restorative practice. It looks good. But what we don't realize until we realize that we have a spicy kid is that kind of method and that practice actually escalates things and makes things worse. And then you often have parents or teachers that are like, I don't know why this, method isn't working. So I'm not threatening them. I'm not punishing them. I don't understand why this is not working. And it's because what we have to understand with these kids, but especially in the school setting, is a kid that has anything, anxiety, OCD, ADHD. It sounds to me like your daughter probably does have ADHD just because you said anxiety, depression, and OCD. And kind of once you're in that realm, meaning the neurodivergent realm, you start sort of ticking boxes and other things. So for example, when a parent says to me that their kid is dyslexic, I immediately go, okay, the statistical likelihood that they are going to have another neurodivergent trait or diagnosis is super high. So we can kind of just operate, I think, as though she has an ADHD diagnosis because I wouldn't be treating her any differently in terms of treatment plans or what I would be suggesting. I think it just helps the school possibly if you throw that in there because then they kind of understand a bit more. Well, ideally, they understand a bit more about how to interact with her. So The better way, I think, to view it for schools and for parents is we're talking about a kid that has a nervous system disorder, a nervous system disease, a nervous system injury, a nervous system problem, a nervous system injury. I think it's one of those things that, like, I can say that about myself being diagnosed ADHD. I don't like other people saying that, and I wouldn't want other people saying that about my kid who's also diagnosed that they have a nervous system disorder or a nervous system disease or injury. But I feel like that language helps us get our head around it a lot quicker of what the actual problem is here. It's not defiance. It's not opposition. It's not disrespect. Those are like maybe some byproducts that come down the track, but the real issue is a nervous system that has a disability. And I know that word is loaded and I don't use it lightly, but I think if I said to someone before my kid has a meltdown, I'm imagining when my kids were little, you know, and they were like 1 and 3 or 3 and 5 or something. If I had said to a person watching my kid have a meltdown in the grocery store, oh, she has a nervous system disability, they would instantly kind of click. I think the word disability would make them go, oh, something's different here. So change my expectations, change my perception of what I'm witnessing right here. But also then when you say nervous system, I think that changes for people. Well, my hope is that it would change for people their expectation of what they're witnessing, and that it would help them shift into realizing that the way that this child is behaving is not a choice. It's their nervous system is taking over, and it's a nervous system response. Does that make sense? And so that's what I'm hearing as I read your question. I was just like, oh girl, like she's just got such a nervous system disorder. The way that her nervous system is organized, or not organized, it is not ordered, it is disordered. And so that's why she responds to things somewhat disproportionately, or why she gets so enraged at things. Okay. So the quick summary, and then I'm going to go through a deeper kind of unpacking of this, is the school needs to focus on a couple things differently. And this is parents too, teachers, whatever, like all of us are in the same camp, you know, we're around these kids for huge chunks of time, and we have to change because the kid's not going to change. Why? Because the kid is an immature nervous system and a brain that's not fully built yet. And so we have to change because we are older and have a fully developed brain. And also just being the adult or the teacher, we're in a position of power. So that just means it's going to be easier for us to change rather than expecting a kid, but especially a kid that has a nervous system disorder. And I would classify anxiety and OCD as a nervous system disorder. I mean, one of my favorite ways to describe autism or ADHD is a nervous system disorder, a nervous system disability, because I think that helps outsiders understand quicker what is going on for the kid, and that they're not choosing the behavior that they're having, especially if it's challenging behavior. But I think even just anxiety and OCD feels the same for me to say it's a nervous system disability or nervous system disorder, that the nervous system isn't organized in an ideal way and how it responds to threat or stress or because it's the perception. The perception setting in a neurodivergent brain is just skewed. It sees things differently, which has its benefits and stuff, of course, in, say, creativity or other things. But in the school setting, it often sucks, the way that the perception is sort of dialed in or not dialed in. Okay. So the main things that people who are around your daughter need to understand is, one, spicy kids regulate through relationship. The most concerning thing in your whole question was you saying that she doesn't really have a relationship with anyone at school. As soon as I read that, I was like, yikes, because we're screwed if she doesn't have a relationship with anyone at school. That is key. And that could be the librarian, that could be the custodian, that could be the assistant principal, that could be Janet from accounting. I don't care, but like just some grown-up that she feels safe with and that she feels connected to, and like they get her, because one of the kryptonites for spicy kids is feeling misunderstood. And it sounds like for your daughter, she feels misunderstood a lot. And if she feels misunderstood, that means her nervous system is going to kick off and she's going to go into fight flight. And so when I say that too, by the way, a nervous system disability or disorder, what the sentence to unpack that means, the way that how I would word it is, the way that my daughter's body registers threat and perceives threat is different than the typical kid and the typical nervous system. The way that my daughter's brain, body, and nervous system all work together means that when she perceives, and it may not be quote unquote real to everybody else, but for her and her nervous system, the way that she perceives, the way that you just looked at her, the way that you spoke to her, the way that those kids just giggled over there, she is more likely to hit the button in her body that says, that's a threat. We must kick off fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. That button for her is very, very close. For other neurotypical kids, that button is a bit over here. It's a bit of a reach that they have to go to hit the, you know, whoop, whoop, alarm, 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 you know, fight, flight, fight, flight, fight, flight. Like that state does not get kicked off so quickly for a neurotypical. For a spicy kid, it's like that button is right there. It's like, I just have to turn my head slightly and oop, I've hit it, you know, like I could sneeze and I could hit it. Like it's so easy to hit the fight, flight button. Okay. So, or stress response, if we want to use technical language. Okay. So if she is not regulated, that's like the worst thing ever, because her regulation needs to be the priority of everybody, making sure that she's regulated. Now, what's so hard about that is you don't know what's going on in her head. Teachers certainly don't know what's going on in her head. If they have a classroom of 30 other kids that they're responsible for, it's very hard to tune into one kid and be like, what's happening for you today? Like they can't, right? So what we need to focus on then is relationship, and how do I get a connected relationship with this kid so that she feels safe, or her nervous system perceives safety and her nervous system is less likely to perceive threat. That could be chatting at the beginning of class about something that she's interested in. So I would write all of the teachers, like the specialist teachers, you know, like her math teacher, her science teacher, her French teacher, her sport teacher, her art teacher, like all of the teachers, telling them this is what she loves. She loves Minecraft. She loves ponies. She loves reading books about anime. She loves, like cats, whatever. Her favorite color is purple, whatever. Telling them things about her that they can connect with her on, or TV shows, maybe, or movies, but stuff that they can connect with her on. And then that is what will start to build the bridge so that she, her nervous system, will deem them as safe and deem them as a trusted grown-up. That is like number one, number one, number one, is we have to find a buddy. We have to find a grown-up at school that she feels has her back, understands her, and can help de-escalate. Because that's really like, In my notes, the number one thing I wrote is regulate through relationships. So we have to get her a relationship there that is regulating. And I know relationships take time, but at 10 years old, that can happen quicker than adults. Like that can happen quite fast if we can find someone who's got the stuff. And the stuff meaning connection. Like if I were to go into her school and write down like a treatment plan or like a method that I think would be helpful, the first thing I would write is who, where, which staff member, and in which room or, you know, building or whatever, can connection with this child be prioritized? And a quick way to translate that is UNO. You know, the card game? I call it UNO kids or UNO sessions, where she just needs a lot of UNO time, man, meaning she just needs a lot of time playing games and connecting and not talking about behavior and not talking about school and not talking about feelings or anything like that, but just hanging out and bonding and building our relationship and building trust. So I'm like, who can she play UNO with? That's what my brain is thinking. That was the first thing my brain thought when I read your question is, oh, she needs UNO time. Who can she play UNO with? Second point is de-escalate, not discipline. I know that schools have their heart in the right place because they have a million kids to manage. They have a million people to please. You know, you got to please the teachers, the principal, the department, parents, the kid. Like, it's so hard. It is so hard. But the word that all of us have to get out of our mouth and take away is discipline. Also, the Latin root of the word means to teach. So discipline is, you know, if you think about the Jesus and the disciples, it's that's where it comes from, is to teach, right? So when we talk about disciplining a kid, I think most of us kind of think of punishment, but most of us, I don't think of the term to teach. But that's what I think she needs, is she needs an adult or adults at school that can help to teach her nervous system that she is safe there. They do understand her and they are on her side. The problem is, and this is so consistent in schools, is the teachers don't realize that she doesn't speak English. She speaks a different language, and that's all spicy kids. That's all neurodivergent kids. But they need to learn how to be multilingual. Is that fair? No. Would it be nicer if we all lived in a world where everybody spoke the same language? Yes, but sorry, that's not where we're at. Where we're at is when you're dealing with neurodivergent nervous systems, it's not English or whatever your native tongue is. You might have this kid over here who speaks French. This kid speaks Japanese. This kid speaks, you know, Chinese, but then that kid over there speaks a different dialect of Chinese. That kid's Italian. That kid speaks Greek. Like, that's just how it is. However, if you can start to learn some like universal languages, which I feel like is part of what I teach, like the spicy framework and the spicy model to me is a multilingual framework and method, then you can basically be speaking lots of languages at once. You know, you don't need to learn French, Italian, Spanish, you know, Chinese. You can just learn spicy. And if you can speak spicy, then you're good. And that's what I think the teachers are missing at your daughter's school, is they just don't know how to speak spicy. They're not bad people. They're not bad or, you know, inexperienced or dumb teachers. They just don't speak spicy yet. And that's okay, because I'm a spicy teacher, so I can teach them how to speak spicy. But the first thing about discipline is we got to get that out of our head, that that's not what these kids need. It's what it looks like they need. If you base our behavior management strategies on stuff from old school, like from the 80s and 90s, but we now have better ways, and we know now, simply because of imaging in the brain, and that we can see different stuff, you know, 2014 onwards, a lot of stuff really, really changed in our understanding of how kids' brains work. And most teachers that are teaching today probably were already done with school in 2014 when a lot of this stuff came out. So I don't blame them for not knowing. It's a lot of it, this stuff is new and it hasn't made it into teaching curriculum yet. But the gist of it is that discipline doesn't work long-term. It's more damaging than anything, and we have to find a different way, but it's so hard, right? How do you find a different way if you don't know that there is even another way? A lot of schools just think, and parents think, that discipline is the way, right? But especially with spices, we got to just get off the discipline train. It has to be. And so that's why the check-in, check-out cards and stuff backfire massively and do not work with these kids, because just the concept of like checking in and checking out, feels shamey to spicy kids. It feels like I'm being watched.
If you're a parent or a professional who works with children and you want my help in improving things with the kiddos in your life, or if you're simply a human being feeling kind of stuck and maybe kind of overwhelmed, my online programs have lots of resources, transformative content, one-on-one coaching, group coaching, and a supportive community. If you want to learn more, just go to HeidiRogers.com. All right, friends, thank you as always for tuning in today. Our time is our most precious asset, so I truly appreciate you sharing your time with me. I'll see you right back here for the next episode of Tell the Others.